And it's a bad, it's a hard thing to see ahead, you know. I know some years ago I developed a program called The Fires of Our Ancestors Are Burning, and it essentially was, a beginning of a conversation that looked at the values, beliefs, and practices of our ancestors. It then looked at the coming of the British. It then looked at impacts and effects of that invasion. And the fourth aspect to the project was, how do we develop a future vision? And in order to do that, just in a group, a small group, we had to look at, well, what were those policies, what were those things that brought us to where we're at today, you know? And we had to answer that to develop some future vision of how things may be, you know. You know, for the theories you hear, for all the goodwill, there's people who still live in communities without fresh, clean water, that live in abject poverty that is atrocious, you know, that should be abhorrent. And I think, and this is now, it's not First Nations people, but you see this spiralling down of oppression on working people of all persuasions, you know. I think when what we see around us becomes so bitter that we can't no longer swallow it and try to digest and rationalize it, maybe a good change will come, you know. But I don't know that we're there in this country yet, you know. But I would like to think that an inclusive, sustainable future whatever that may look like, is something that we can walk together towards, you know. And I think from the walking of that together, that future will build itself, you know. When we respect and acknowledge each other as human beings, then I think that future will bring itself, you know. When we start to treat our Mother Earth as it's our own body, and we would treat it no less than we would treat ourselves, then we're on a good way towards a sustainable future, I would think. Simplistic as that is, given all these global consumerism and being told, bombarded 24/7 with the things that we should want or we have to have, and all those kinds of things.
It's a really good way of putting it. Treating the earth like it's part of your own body.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's core to our values. You know, we don't say man, earth. There's no separation, you know. The earth this or man this or this. No. The earth is my body, you know. It's my marrow, my bones, my blood, my flesh, yeah. And we spring from her. Our ancestors sprung out of the earth and sky, you know, and we go back to her. Not a commodity, you know. just to plunder without thought of giving back. Yeah.
So that, for me, segues well into the second question, which is also, I think, a difficult question, and that's the central areas of unlearning that people, the things that people need to unlearn so that we can achieve an inclusive, sustainable future for all of us.
Mm.
You have to wonder, where do you begin?
Yeah, the question is maybe simple to read, but when I myself, I reflect on them and I think, oh. You know, it is, in one sense, I think it's a question of unlearning, but in another sense, it's really of reconnecting and relearning. I guess, and realizing that we are, the earth is our body, you know, and our reconnection to the earth is relearning, because it was all our ancestors across the globe come from there, you know, and it's about relearning our reciprocal obligations to the things that give and sustain life, all life. Yeah, and but I guess there's a term today when we say unlearning, that, you know, many of us say it's a process of decolonizing, of questioning, you know, with self-reflection and vigor about these things that we have been taught, you know, through the education systems and by others, that we've learnt, you know, and we've just taken it on face value, that is a fact, that's the truth, and we seem to have lost the ability to question authority, and I think we need to vigorously question authority and when we have those opportunities. We're told that Captain Cook discovered Australia. And we believed that, you know. We don't, most of us don't question it. That's just become,
we were told it was a peaceable settlement.
Mm. Yeah, you know.
I never questioned that when I was growing up.
No, you know. So,
it never occurred to me that there were clearly people living here.
Yes.
But I never made that connection,
mm.
that there were people living here, but Captain Cook discovered Australia.
Yeah. And that it was an empty land without people, you know. And I think 92, was it? The High Court struck out the legal fiction of Terra Nullius, But can we say that the mindset embedded over two centuries in the hearts and minds of broader Australia has been eradicated or struck out, and it's still within the systematic foundations of this country. It was built on the lie of Terranellius, you know. And so when you see these mass incarcerations of our people, the suicides, the impoverishment, the continued theft of our lands by what they, inverted commas, call by legal means, we see today that mindset, it's over there, it's out of sight. That Terra Nullius mindset is still there. How do we shift that? How do we move that? You know,
because it's one of the colonizers' tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reinforces it.
Yeah. And constantly reinforces it. You know. The struggle. The day-to-day struggle is getting through that, you know, that ingrained, systematic and structural idea of this land is nobody's. No, this land was home to, you know, several hundred nations across the continent, held together through law, and spoke several hundred different languages, and then some dialects of that, you know. It was rich culturally, it was sustainable, the future of children was assured, and handed down after generation through generation through generations, you know, that of learnt practice and experience, wisdom of having lived and being born out from this country, you know. So there's, I guess, so much to, you know, I've been on this decolonizing journey for some 30 years, but I'm still walking it, I'm still learning, I'm still catching myself, you know, because it becomes deeply rooted and embedded in our psyche, you know, and
is it possible to unlearn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we won't, and I guess much like a sustainable future, we won't know unless we start to walk it. And but it's a daily process, yeah? And it can be a very harrowing and a process as well. Yeah. Some things we need to face and self-reflect upon and question are not easy, you know. And it takes courage to do it. It's easy to remain in the status quo. We just have to accept it, things as they are. And but to change it, to self-reflect, to ask of ourselves the hard questions, and then try to walk to where we're going, you know. is a very difficult road, yeah? Yeah. But we have to come to the point in this country where we truly come to terms with its continuing history. I say continuing because it hasn't stopped for Aboriginal people. It continues. The language in which oppression is visited upon us may have changed, but the results are nonetheless the same, you know. I mean, our people are still dying in custody after a royal commission, you know. And our children are killing themselves at, they're not even teenagers, you know. They're 9, they're 10, whatever. And upwards. And I don't know, there seems to be a sort of thing that that's sort of okay for Aboriginal people, yeah, to, you know. And maybe because the mainstream, there's health, education, housing, employment. And that's, of course, that's a healthy thing for people to have and expect. But that's really when you think it's not inclusive. Yes, we get the houses, but what's the taproot of the question is, well, this is our country, you know. We're 100% majority in 1788. We're maybe 3% today. Why? You know, so I think we have to learn to ask the right questions, and I think we have to unlearn and to direct those questions to the people who can best answer them, you know. Because I know there are lots of people say, well, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? You know. Well, the question itself becomes problematic. Well, you've not been listening, you've not seen, you've not heard, you don't know what's happening in your own country. Because it's no wonder to Aboriginal people, and I'm sure for many people, but I'm only talking from my personal perspective. It's no wonder that Australian governments can treat people fleeing their country, fleeing their homelands. Nobody wants to leave their homeland through fear of, you know, and threat of violence and murder and all kinds of atrocities, and stick them in the middle of an ocean. In tents and ATCO sheds. And say they can't find refuge here. I mean, those kinds of things don't really come as a surprise, because that's, you treat our people the same way. You know, the, these people who purport to lead this country treat it, our people the same way. And so how do we need to throw off the yoke of colonialism and that kind of thinking, you know, and we have to lift our consciousness a bit, you know, and again, see each other as human beings, not a lesser than, you know. When, in the program I talked about earlier that we developed, you know, when you look at violence as a spiralling down effect, and it always goes and it spirals down towards those that we think are lesser than, or indeed aren't really human. And when you look at the history of colonization and the British, these kinds of cycles of violence were being enacted out within the industrial age in Britain, the mortality rates and the incarceration rates, crimes of hunger, people were in the main, were transported here and things like that, and this spiralling down of violence continues. But that kind of violence, and putting people offshore, the treatment of our people here today, still segregated, but now into jails and youth detention centres and what have you, is a continuing spiralling down of violence. You know? It's violent. And they tell us that, you know, they have all these anti-violent ribbon days and things, yet they carry out the most heinous of violent acts upon other human beings. And in order to do that, those people have to be less than. And how do they become less than? Well, we become pedophiles in our own communities. We become wife bashers. We become alcoholics. We become all these kinds of things. So they introduce an intervention and all these kinds of things. Because, you know, we're not really people. We're all these refugees in other countries. Oh, they're refugees and they're illegal and all these. So they make them lesser than. And then when they make it lesser than, we subconsciously think, oh, it's okay. But it's not, you know. So, and I know there's millions of people who question that, and rightly so. And we've got to continue to question it. But, you know, we need to clean up our own backyard, you know. Those very things that have been enacted, they're enacted here today and they have been for 230 plus years. And we need to come to that. And we need to come to a peaceful settlement in this country, because I don't think that this country and the pervading shame of the collective psyche of non-Aboriginal people has been addressed. I'm not talking about, you know, people feeling guilty or, you know, or that. I'm talking, there is a deep shame, because underneath the blanket we know what's there. Well, let's roll the blanket back. Let's talk about it. Yeah? Let's get it out there. Let's resolve it, and let's come to a peaceful settlement in a way that we can all live. You don't have to be together, but that we can all live with each other, you know, and respect each other's way of being, you know.
I'm hopeful that it's possible.
Oh, it's, I mean, we say these things, but it's merely to point out, is it possible? Absolutely. Can I change from a violent person into a person who is no longer? Yes. My healing journey has been that. Is it easy? No. Is it absolute? No. But is it possible? Yes. Yeah. Can I regain my language? Yes. Can I participate in our cultural ways? Yes. I can do that. And I've done that, you know. So is it possible? I can tell you, yes. Not only possible, you can realise that. But in our own healing, cultural or otherwise, our own healing is just about us being comfortable with oppression, then that's not healing. There's still a long way to go. Yeah, we have, because in my healing journey, my process of, as I said, I learned those things, but it hasn't relieved the collective hurt, deep hurt of our people. So, you know, we have to continue to raise those questions, you know, and to vigorously question authority. And you know, I mean, if we do that and we simply become comfortable with the oppression, then we're no better or no further along the way, wherever that might lead us, you know. But I think the future will be in our journey, you know, if we start it, you know. It will make itself, it will become evident on what we need to do as human beings to address what's happening. But have no answer, unfortunately. You know. So, is it possible? Yes. If I had a vision of myself free of, you know, drugs and alcohol and violence, I would not have, if I did not believe it possible, then I wouldn't be here today, you know. So we have to look at self, and question self and reflect hard on self and change, you know. And culture for me was the taproot of that change. I had to go back and look at what was there, what is already here in broad daylight. And then I had to relearn my connection to that, you know. When they told me, oh, your you know, language is not here, I went and I found it, you know. And it's still there. And we may not have our own, but our neighbour may have a language or whatever, you know. So, of course, it's changed, yeah. Because not all things can remain the same because of colonisation. And they told me that all your the cultural ways and the Aboriginal business, so that's all finished, you know. But no, it's still here. I travelled overseas with First Nations people to ask them, and they showed me and taught me the role of culture, ceremony, and spirituality in their healing and decolonisation process, you know. So I know it's possible. We can do it. Of course, conditions and certain other factors are different here, but we can do it, you know. And so for me, that has been the journey, constant learning, questioning and continuing on, yeah. And looking at what is the taproot of our values, our beliefs and our practices, you know. And trying to walk with those rather than to walk with the anger and the bitterness of colonization and the you know, and all that encompasses, yeah. Because we walk with that and we drift away from those core values, you know. And there's always, and maybe I'll leave it at this, is that there's three pillars that I look towards. And I learned this from someone else. That in our law we speak the truth. Because how can you move or go forward in an untruthful way, you know, or you tell you're not truthful about the things that happen, or what you've seen and things like that. And number two is that we care in our share for our people. And number three is that this is our country, you know. Those three things keep me going. And, you know, caring and sharing across this continent is the first economy of this country. It was woven together through reciprocal obligations, you know. It enabled us to travel, to be well fed, to be looked after, and so on. Through that process of caring, sharing, and reciprocal obligations. And so that's why I say to young people, you know, in your law, who you are, speak your truth. Care and share for your people. And always know that this is your country. I don't know if I answered your question.
That's a perfect way to finish.